everyone. Welcome to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. And on today's show, we are talking about LNG. So the Mythbusters Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurtz are going to give listeners an overview of LNG's value chain, the liquefaction process, and the role of turbo machinery and some future developments in the industry. So welcome to you both. Thank you for hopping on today.
Thanks, Alyssa. I'm looking forward to this very relevant discussion. This is probably the most important turbo machinery discussion right now in our field. Everybody's talking about liquefied natural gas. So very, very relevant topic, very current.
Yes, I mean, liquefaction is important and actually has been a game changer in the oil and gas industry.
LNG is definitely a hot topic. So let's just start with kind of a 101 on what is LNG, and can you kind of go through the value chain and where turbo machinery comes in?
I think the best way to start this is looking at the value chain as the entire natural gas process all the way from the beginning, where you look at really starting at the production of natural gas. And then from the production, you go to processing of natural gas. That's usually called a gas plant. Then you often have to transport the natural gas to a liquefaction plant, an LNG plant. Then you really, there's some further processing, but most of it is refrigeration. And usually then there's some storage and then loading onto some kind of marine transport. And then from a marine transport, again, you unload and then you go back into a pipeline and you get to the end user. So there's an entire value chain. And that entire value chain has a lot of turbo machinery in it. And a rough estimate is that for every 1,000 horsepower of refrigeration that's in an LNG plant, there's about another 10,000 horsepower of other turbo machinery in the value chain that is required. So if you look at, for example, the production side, you have gas gathering machine, then you have forwarding machines into gas processing. In the gas processing, you have acid gas removal, dehydration, mercury removal, all kinds of stuff. There's off-gas compressors. There's boil-off compressors, so there's various compressors there. Then usually you go into a natural gas liquid, not to be confused with LNG, but natural gas liquid removal, which is really the heavy. So the butane and the pentane and the propane of the natural gas, which is then usually sold off as a separate product. So then you go into the pipeline and you transport that gas. So there's a header station compression, and then there's usually some pipeline compressor. And then finally you get to the LNG plant, and there you have usually a refrigeration process. Those could be a cascade type process or mixed refrigerant processes. They use either a reverse Brayton or a reverse Rankine cycle, also called vapor compression processes. And then from there, you go to storage. And again, you have off gas and you have boil off gas compressors. Then you usually have loading turbo machinery. Those could be pumps. And then from there, you go into the regasification. So there are the huge number of turbo machines in the process, and they're all very relevant. And they go from fairly small to large machinery. The main thing with LNG is that it allows you to transport natural gas over very large distances beyond what a pipeline is capable of doing, right? You can't transport natural gas from North America to Europe via pipeline because that's a little bit complicated. That's a long, long, long pipeline. So you liquefy it. That means basically you bring it down to minus 270 or so degrees Fahrenheit beyond where it condensates into a liquid. And then you transport it as a liquid where it has a volume about 600 times smaller. And then you regasify it. So it's a really convenient process of transporting natural gas. And at this point in time, natural gas is very, very abundant in the world. And so it's a very good energy carrier. So that's kind of the process. Within the process, in an LNG refrigeration process, you lose some of the energy because it takes energy to refrigerate. And that's typically about 15 to 20%. If you look at the rest of the value stream, there's also some energy lost, but it's not that much. It's, you know, more like 5% for the entire value stream, whereas in the refrigeration plant, that's quite a bit.
Klaus already mentioned that the sort of heart of the LNG production process is the refrigeration process that essentially cools the feed gas, the natural gas, down to temperatures where it becomes a liquid at about ambient pressure, a little bit above ambient pressure, but not much. So there are several different processes to create the temperatures that allow you to liquefy natural gas. I also want to make one thing very clear, that the gases that are used in the refrigeration process are in several loops, so they do not touch the natural gas that is supposed to be liquefied. So the two major processes to afford that is what's called vapor compression, and it's basically the same method that's used in your air conditioner or in your refrigerator. You compress a gas, that gas gets hot, then you cool it to a lower temperature, and then you expand it. And that expansion drops the temperature to very low temperatures, and that's the point where you can use that gas to cool another gas, in this particular case, the liquefied natural gas. The other process is where you compress the gas and then expand it through expanders, and therefore also get very low temperatures. The key issue, and Klaus mentioned that a significant amount of the energy consumption in the in the LNG value chain actually lies in the liquefaction. So the key ingredient is that you use as little energy as possible to get that liquefaction. And in order to do that, you often do the refrigeration process in multiple stages. So you have one refrigeration loop that does the pre-cooling to a cold but not terribly cool temperature. Then you have another process that essentially gets the subcooling, and then you have another process, probably just by dropping the pressure in the natural gas, or by a separate third process to basically get the natural gas liquefied. I also would like to mention, actually, that the construction of LNG plants leads, for example, to a huge increase in the activity building the natural gas pipelines that have to bring the massive amounts of gas, natural gas, into these LNG plants.
So from a turbo machinery perspective, and Rainer mentioned that already, you get your pre-cooling, so that's usually a propane kind of compressor, and then you go into your main cooling loop, and that's, you know, an ethylene loop, or a mixed refrigerant kind of loop, and then you go into your subcooling, which is very often just a Joule Thompson valve, but it may be something else, a methane compressor. So there's, you know, two, three stages of refrigeration. And as Rainer mentioned, these compressors are in a closed loop setup. So they're just basically running a heat exchanger against the process gas, against the gas that's actually going to be liquefied. So from a turbo machinery or compression perspective, it's an interesting challenge because the duty is actually not very dirty. I mean, the gas is clean in your loop. And so from the designer and manufacturing perspective, the challenge has been that these plants have become basically giga plants, right? We started in the 1950s with the technology development, and 1960s with the first LNG plants. These were sub-million tons per year kind of plants, you know, fraction of a million tons per year. And then we got into the 70s, 80s, and they got bigger and bigger. 90s, you got into multi-million tons per year, and now you're looking at these giga LNG facilities where, you know, Qatar Gas have, you know, a production of, you know, something like 20 million tons per year. So quite a bit of natural gas. From a turbo machinery perspective, that's interesting because now we're getting into using the same kind of machinery, but making it bigger and bigger and bigger without sacrificing reliability, right? So you have to scale machinery because you don't want to have 20 or 30 turbo machinery trains running. You want to minimize the amount of equipment that you have that's good from both a reliability perspective, but also from a capital cost perspective. So you minimize the equipment that you have, but you got to get bigger and bigger and bigger without sacrificing reliability and obviously maintaining reasonable costs. So that's kind of been the challenge. When you look at reliability, that's critical for an LNG plant because it's a process plant. If one turbine machine fails, your entire plant goes down. It's going to take you days, if not weeks, to restart the entire process, which is a pain in the neck, and really nobody wants to do it. So then the next big challenge, you know, we've been looking at scaling and getting bigger and putting more compressors onto a single train to reduce the number of pieces of equipment. But the next big challenge is, and Rainer also kind of talked about this briefly, is the efficiency, right? You want to really reduce the fuel gas, basically the natural gas that you use to drive your compressors using a gas turbine or sometimes a steam turbine, so that you reduce the amount of energy that you're using to cool your natural gas into a liquefied process. And so that's kind of the current challenges, and that's what we're looking at as a manufacturer more and more, is how do we make the entire process more efficient?
The one thing about getting bigger and bigger plants has had a tremendous impact on the drivers for these compressors. And one of the problems is that there are big plants that are basically baseload plants that want to run at essentially full load all the time. But there are a lot of newer plants that actually take into account both the fluctuation in gas supply and the fluctuation in user supply. The other problem that you have is that the ambient temperature, for example, which changes in many sites by quite a margin between summer and winter, between day and night, has a big impact on how much LNG you can produce with your available drivers and on how you operate your compressors. So there has been a lot of discussions on what kind of drivers to use. Currently, a lot of people favor drivers that allow variable speeds over a reasonably wide range. But the disadvantage of that is that the biggest gas turbines you can buy are basically constant speed drivers. So there is quite a bit of discussion on how many drivers to use and how to split up the processes so that that you can actually make best use of the installed driver power.
Yeah, and Rainer's right. What we've seen over the last 20 years now is we really, for the first 30 years of LNG plant development, we saw bigger and bigger and bigger. And so the main challenge was always reliability. That's always the main challenge for turbine machinery. But then it was scaling, right? Get bigger and bigger and bigger for the compressors and for the drivers. And now over the last 15 years, 20 years, we've seen a little bit of a scale back to mid-sized machines, so not 100-something megawatt, but maybe in the 50, 60, 70, or even less megawatt range, but more trains. And that comes down to operational flexibility. That comes down to better meet your demand profile, but also having a plant that can be a little more operationally flexible when you have fuel gas changes, when you have ambient temperature changes. So operational flexibility has become also critical for especially some of the plants in North America that tend to have smaller trains than what you would see, for example, in the Middle East and in other places.
Okay, that wraps up part one of our podcast on LNG. Join us again next week for part two as we dive deeper into how liquefaction works, and then some trends that are happening, such as smaller production facilities, floating offshore vessels, and really just a growth in the industry overall. So thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, and we will see you next time.